Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Deck the halls with food and spirits. Tis the season for holiday parties, bubbly drinks, and feasts fit for kings. We have three experts in the studio who know a thing or two about putting on a fantastic holiday spread. They'll be able to give you some pointers for a holiday to remember. We have Rick Orlando, chef owner of New World Home Cooking Company in Saugerties, New York, and chef manager of New World Bistro Bar in Albany. Dan Thomas is the sommelier for the Red Lion Inn in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. And Chris Weld is the master distiller and owner of Berkshire Mountain Distillers in Great Barrington and Sheffield, Massachusetts. Rick, Dan, Chris, welcome to the show. Nice to have you on Food Friday.
Good morning. Oh, good afternoon.
Good morning. We'll see if it's good evening by the time we're done here. Number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also get in touch with us by emailing voxpop@wamc.org. You can post your comments on our website, wamc.org/voxpop. You can also go to our Facebook page. It's WAMC Radio. You'll see a little spot there to post. Or you could tweet us at @WAMCVoxPop. And I actually tweeted a few moments ago a picture of some of the fine, fine Berkshire booze we have here today. And we'll start with that. Chris Weld, what did you bring?
I brought a smorgasbord today.
Oh,
a little
boy,
vodka, a gin, some rum, bourbon, part of a cask finish bourbon series we did, and our freshly released gin and tonic in a bottle.
And that gin and tonic, we sampled it here. And here comes our, oddly enough, here comes our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall, who may also want to try sampling this. The gin and tonic in a bottle tastes like, it does not taste like a pre-bottled cocktail that you would see on the store shelf. It tastes like a gin and tonic.
Yeah, not one you've seen yet. Anyways.
Yeah, it's very nice.
It's a homemade tonic.
And so the gin that you make, I'm something of a gin snob, but the gin that you make, it's a classic style gin, at least the Greylock.
The Greylock is a classic London dry style. That's right. It's got 7 botanicals in it, 80 proof. It's been getting great accolades, and that's sort of our flagship gin. That's stayed the same for the last 7 years or so. And then we do a series gin called Ethereal, and we change the recipe on that. And that's more of a what's dumped into the New World gin category.
So more flowery and surprise ingredients?
Kitchen sink, whatever you want to throw in it.
So every batch is different?
Every batch is different. I make it somewhat seasonal, a little warmer in the wintertime, a little brighter and citrusy in the summertime. New label color, new batch number on the back of the bottle.
How much experimentation? Have you ever had a real dog of a batch? This is awful.
We've had one batch that I redistilled.
Really?
Yep. And in the beginning, it was quite scientific, where I would, you know, do aliquots and change it very slowly and do test runs. And now, after doing, I think, 18 of them, I'm sort of flying by the seat of my pants.
Well, the number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Chris Weld is the master distiller and owner of Berkshire Mountain Distillers. Also here, Dan Thomas from the Red Lion. And holiday time's big time at the Red Lion. Yeah, Dan?
We are extremely busy right now. I'll leave here, and as soon as we get done, fly back to Stockbridge. Recreation weekend of Norman Rockwell's famous picture, Stockbridge Main Street at Christmas. We'll be done on Sunday, so we serve a lot of Chris's booze this weekend, every weekend.
So you don't do just wine. You'll deal with mixing up some beverages and whatnot?
I'm in charge of all wine, booze, spirits, beer, bar operations.
What's the most popular mixed drink right now at the Red Lion?
You know, year in, year out, it's funny, it's a Bloody Mary.
Really? Even
in the winter, it's shocking. We do them from scratch. There's nothing, it's very traditional. But 9 o'clock at night, people come to the Red Lion and they order a Bloody Mary because that's what you have to have there.
Do you make yours heavy on the horseradish?
It's balanced, I think. There's plenty of horseradish. We use Cholula instead of Tabasco, Sacramento tomato, which is great. Ice Glen vodka actually really brings it together. Some people in the winter will drink them with the bourbon, which adds a different flavor to it.
Is that the same drink, Rick?
Well, I wouldn't call it a Bloody Mary, but you might want to call it, you know, Bloody Hank.
Bloody Larry.
Bloody bourbon.
Bloody Harry, yeah.
So
we sell a lot of Bloody Marys more in the summer. It's funny. They're really popular in the summer, and we infuse vodka. We use Brooklyn Republic as our bulk vodka, which is a nice handmade vodka. But we infuse it with vegetables and horseradish to kind of bring the in an infuser and bring the whole thing to life. But in the winter, they're very slow. That's really interesting, marketing-wise.
You know, people will drink seasonally. I can see, you know, when I buy Chris's wine, or sorry, Chris's spirits by the week, in August, it's vodka and gin. In December, it's bourbon, rum, and corn whiskey.
Yeah.
And you see the sales are drastically different. But for us, one particular drink that tends to stand out is that Bloody Mary. Now, we sell a lot of everything else, but, you know, if you were going to say the one quintessential Red Lion cocktail, it would be the Bloody Mary.
Huh.
So, Rick Orlando at New World Home Cooking.
Hi.
Hi. You know, holiday time, big time for you. What's on the menu this time around?
Well, we have the two restaurants 50 miles apart, and then we have New World Catering. So, we're doing a lot of house parties, holiday parties, and everybody is designing their own signature cocktails for their parties. That's a big trend now.
Yeah.
Instead of lugging a whole open bar, you design one or two signature cocktails. Most of them still, they're revolving around one white clear liquor and one gold liquor. I'd like to see more rye, but it's a lot of bourbon. I love bourbon, too. But I think that in the winter, I just think that in Christmas time, rye just seems like the holiday spirit to
me. And there is some good craft rye out there.
Oh, awesome stuff, yeah. And,
it's not cheap, though.
Mackenzie's rye we use a lot of the Adirondacks. But, yeah, we let the customers kind of – everyone's online, right? They're Googling. They're looking stuff up. They're looking at all these different craft drinks. So when we do parties, they say, you know, I want to do this, whatever – you know, Jerry's Beard. What's Jerry's Beard? You know, and it's some drink with rum and bitters and juice. But people are coming up with really good cocktails. And then I like to design them. And we have at the Bistro, we have Sarah Jane McLaughlin, who's one of the best mixologists in the city, and Justin Dabrowski down in Albany. They're both really good. So, and we use a lot of these spirits, especially Chris's stuff. So
there's an article in Cigar Aficionado, of all places, this month about rum and some of the high-quality small batch rums that are out there. And one part that I found interesting was nowadays people are inclined to make, let's say, an old fashioned with rum or a Manhattan with rum. To me, if it doesn't have the classic ingredients, you can't call it an old fashioned if it doesn't have bourbon in it.
Well, you guys can chime in, but I can say as a chef, what's happening with spirits is what's been happening with food for the last 20 years. People are experiencing something and then jamming. And twisting it. And, it's if good. It tastes good, it's good. Right?
They're pushing the borders. And, you know, I think it's okay. The Manhattan with typically is rye, but bourbon, I think, is fair game. We were speaking about this before. The vodka martini, I think, might be pushing it a bit.
Yeah, it's not a martini to me if it doesn't have gin.
But I think to do bourbon in a Manhattan, we use our rum actually a lot in a Manhattan. It drinks a lot like a whiskey.
And do you make rum?
We do. And it's there are now... There were in the 1680s or something about 150 craft distilleries around here, mostly rum.
Because molasses was easy to get, or
because molasses was easy to get and cheap, and then and was our number one cash export in this country for a while, and then we got taxed by the mother country on the molasses, and we had the they say it was about tea, but it was
the whole revolution thing happened. Well, the number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Let's get a call or two in before our first break. Let's go to Doe in Wendell, Mass. Hi, Doe, you're on.
Hi, I got a question about making a fruitcake with gluten-free substitute for flour.
Mm-hmm.
What's a good choice?
Well, I'll tell you right now. First of all, you want to use Chris's rum to soak that thing.
I got that too.
We've done a lot of experimentation, and we have settled on Bob's Red Mill 1-to-1, it's called. Bob's Red Mill makes a 1-to-1 substitute flour for wheat flour that worked. My wife is gluten-free, and she swears
Bob's
by it.
Red Mill. That's
Bob's Red Mill, but they make one called 1-to-1. You can get it at the co-op here in Albany, and it works.
Uh-huh.
It works perfectly. I always suggest when you're using a gluten-free flour, add a little extra fat. Throw an extra egg yolk in there, maybe a scoop of sour cream just
to
bulk it up.
Yeah.
Texture and moisture, but yeah, Bob's Red Mill 1-to-1 is. I mean, I'm sure that we'll get calls with other ones, but that one has worked for us on large scale and small scale.
Okay, well, I got another question related to the fruitcake. It says soak the dried fruit in chilled tea, and it calls for chai, capital C-H-A-I-T. What is that?
Do you want to talk about that, or should I?
That's up your alley.
It's an Indian spice tea. You can buy chai tea bags at the health food store or the supermarket, or you can just Google online and make a chai spice mix with a little cardamom, cinnamon, black pepper, a couple fennel seeds. get that beautiful flavor of maybe some fenugreek, that beautiful flavor of chai. But it's an Indian spice. But do you have internet access where you are?
No.
Oh, wow. You're lucky.
I live in the woods.
You're lucky. You must get to sleep.
Yeah, how about that?
Let's go to a decent store, health food store,
well,
good soup, and get some chai.
We have great stores like that in the area.
Yeah, okay. And don't forget the rum.
Yeah.
All right, Doe. Have a great holiday, huh?
You too. Thank you.
The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. It is a Food Friday. Rick Orlando is here, Dan Thomas and Chris Weld. Yours truly, Ray Graff. Mr. Zach, we'll take a break, and we'll be playing. Let's have a cocktail after the break. All right? All right.
Support for WAMC comes from Pangea, North Bennington, Vermont. Contemporary American cuisine prepared with local sustainable ingredients, featuring international beer and wines, VermontFineDining.com and Facebook. Saratoga County Tourism, celebrating the holiday season in historic downtown Saratoga Springs, featuring boutiques, galleries, gift shops, dining, entertainment, events, and more. ILoveSaratoga.us. Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer, offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tastings Saturday afternoons, spirithaus.com. And Massmocha North Adams, presenting Sundance Theater Lab with Beasts of the Southern Wild screenwriter Lucy Alibar tomorrow and comedian Harry Kondabolu on December 13th. Massmocha.org.
Fox Pop on WAMC. It's a Food Friday. We talk food and we talk drink with Rick Orlando, Dan Thomas, and Chris Weld. And while Chris Weld of Berkshire Mounted Distillers prepares our first cocktail of the afternoon, I ask Rick Orlando about the menu coming up. Now, I got to tell you something. I've told more of my family, and they've been more impressed. You gave me advice prior to last Christmas about brining turkeys.
Yes.
So, Nicole, that's my wife, and I did that. It was the greatest turkey we have ever made by far. Everybody impressed in my entire family.
I have to tell you, thank you very much. And I have a blog. If you go to rickorlando.com,
yeah,
just click on my blog. The recipe, it got over 11,000 hits this season.
It's so good.
It is the rage, and it's a great brine.
So I want to ask you about that. Now, we've
sort
had
of
other...
like distilling, you know? You have to work your spices and your herbs the right way and get the balance.
But... and we were pretty simple about it. I mean, mainly salt and water. But we had some chefs on who recommended the dry brine, mm-hmm, and I can't see how that would be as successful as your method.
I've tried dry brine. The recipe I published is what I found to be the best. And I've had people tell me, even with a lousy turkey, it makes a great turkey.
Oh, it was so good.
Now, I had a good experience. We cooked we had 30 people at my house, 500 at the restaurant, 30 at my house. So I get home around noon. I have a little caviar. I hit the hot tub, and then the guests show up. And my turkey was fully roasted while everyone else was cooking. So I have a fire pit in the yard, and the fire pit has a grid about 2.5 feet above the fire pit. And I took my fully cooked turkey and put it over that fire pit with the hickory and oak smoke and let it just sit and smoke for about 20 minutes before we carved it. And boy.
Only 20 minutes?
Didn't need much. Just a little bit of essence on the outside. But it was an outdoor fire, so
yeah,
it was plenty of smoke.
That's great.
That was great, yeah.
So, Chris Weld of Berkshire Mounted Distillers, what are you mixing up there? It looks awfully familiar.
This is a drink called an Aviation. So it's gin, Luxardo, maraschino liqueur, lemon juice, and a splash of creme de violette. Just actually a drop or two.
This is a very tough job someone's got to do this.
Ready to make some noise?
Let's do it. Okay. Shake it up. Oh, it's a lovely sound.
I hear the train a coming.
It's rolling. Now, John Fisher of the Culinary Institute, he's a booze expert. And in the green room before the round table.
Can we say spirits?
Okay.
Hooch.
So in the green room before the round table one day, he admonished me. And I said, you know, I shake my martinis. I said, no, you must always stir a clear liquor. You bruise it. And I had no idea you could bruise gin, but apparently that is the case.
In theory, you can. I think a lot of it, A lot of it has to do with dilution of the ice. So if you're stirring a drink, won't dilute the ice or the booze as much, so it'll be a higher proof versus shaking it. Tends to melt more ice, cools it faster, drops a proof on the spirit, changes the texture initially because you get that fractionated ice in there.
Yeah.
And in the very beginning, you get a bunch of air bubbles in it too. So this is a classic early 20th century cocktail, in theory invented in New York City.
Right.
It's going to be featured both at the Red Lion Inn and at the Albany Speakeasy for the next couple weeks on their menus. So it's a wonderful, refreshing drink.
Again, what's in it?
So that is our Greylock Gin. The Greylock goes very well with citrus, lemon juice, maraschino Luxardo liqueur, and just a drop of creme de violette.
Oh, is anybody else going to have any while I take a call here?
It's pretty darn delicious.
It is delicious.
I may have to feature it myself.
1-800-348-2551. While we decant, let's take a call. Let's go to Carl in Palatine. Carl. No, it's not. It's not Carl. I don't know. Who is this on line one? Nobody. Let's try Carl in Palatine. Are you there?
Hello, Graf.
Hello, Carl. You're on.
All right, buddy. A favorite summer, which has turned into a wonderful winter drink, I asked the question correctly of your caller. Not a Bloody Mary, a Bloody Bull Shot.
A what now?
A Bloody Bull Shot.
Right. Some consomme.
Yeah, get that beef in there.
Exactly. And a quickie, please. A true, according to Ian Fleming, a true Ian Fleming martini.
Yeah, I know it.
So please tell.
Well, you have gin and you have vodka.
Yes.
And you have, I forget the
secret.
Oh.
What's the secret?
Oh,
the Vesper?
Blonde Lillet.
Blonde Lillet.
Right. I knew it was something like that. Yeah, have you ever tried making that, Carl?
Oh, definitely.
I think it sounds better in theory than it does in practice.
Work for James.
The secret to me is the mixture between the gin and the flour-reduced vodka. But the Lillet is something very special. Then you can ruin it or improve it greatly, depending on what condiment, such as an olive versus lemon, preferably lemon, that you add.
Well, it's a good point, and I appreciate the call, and thank you, Carl, and happy holidays to you. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. And let's see here. Let's go to Eric in Albany. Eric.
Hi, yes. My question is, every Christmas I do a ham, and this year I saw a recipe where they spritz the ham as it's cooking with bourbon, and then about 15 minutes before it's done, they put crushed ginger snaps on there. And I'm just seeing if you can recommend, like, a good bourbon, like if the honey bourbons would be it, or, you know, what?
I think Berkshire bourbon would be a great bourbon. Yeah, I might be biased there.
How about your bourbon-infused maple syrup?
That would be great. So
that would be the way to go.
That's unfortunate.
That's not going to be overpowering.
Well, I wouldn't do the ginger snaps, that's for sure. I would go with the sweetness of the maple syrup.
Okay.
Have the ginger snaps with tea before.
Right. You may want to try and obviously don't do it near an open flame. And if you have some sort of injector, you might want to try that as well. Rick would be better versed on that, but. My guess is that all the booze will evaporate pretty quickly, so you're going to have to do it pretty quickly.
Right, I'd rather not turn it into a flare in the oven.
Right.
Well, at least it'll be in the oven, not on the stove. But, yeah, I mean, I would take the bourbon and mix it. Maple syrup is perfect. You know, you get the bourbon flavor and that sweet glaze. Let the ham, score the ham, let it go until it's within about a half an hour finishing. Then start brushing it at that point, and you'll get that delicious flavor without burning it up on the outside.
Should I leave the cap on it?
Yeah, I do. You trim it back a little bit. Trim the cap to, you know, a quarter inch if it's too much. Where are you getting the ham?
It's actually from the meat market.
Okay, good.
Cooked and
fully smoked and ready?
Yes.
Yeah, score it good and just get... I would seriously get that maple bourbon. Where can they get it, Chris?
That's only at the distillery in Sheffield. We sell that at the shop.
So this maple syrup you age in bourbon barrels.
That maple syrup has spent 2 months in a freshly dumped bourbon barrel, And it is.
Okay, so I have to make a road trip to it, and then
you got to make it. You got to make a pilgrimage to Sheffield. Yeah.
All right.
Or if you want to take some of Chris's bourbon and mix it about one part to four with maple syrup and just make a glaze out of that, you'll be very happy, I think.
Okay. Thanks,
Eric. We appreciate the call. And to be clear, before I give this to my kids on their pancakes, there's no alcohol in this maple syrup.
Oh, there is probably below the 1% that's.
Okay.
FDA, okay.
That's a great idea.
It's
delicious.
That's
a great idea,
It picks up some of the woody smoke of the barrel, too.
1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number, and we are talking to Dan Thomas, who is the sommelier of the Red Lion Inn at Stockbridge, Chris Weld, master distiller and owner of Berkshire Mountain Distillers in Great Barrington and Sheffield, also Rick Orlando, the famous Rick Orlando of New World Home Cooking in Saugerties and the New World Bistro Bar in Albany. And so there's a bottle here, and I believe you brought this, Dan. It's got some red stuff in it. What is this?
So that is an ethereal Negroni. I used Chris's ethereal gin. I believe it was number 7. I used Carpano Vermouth, and then I used Aperol Aperitivo instead of Campari.
And you said earlier that Campari is not the same. Because I know that a Negroni would be traditionally with
Rick
Campari.
Rick said that they've changed the recipe, which I believe the Campari recipe is a secret recipe.
We read a couple of articles, and one of our salesmen said there's no longer using the Beatles in Campari. I know my wife has got an incredibly sensitive palate, and she doesn't drink Campari anymore.
Hmm.
She said it's too sweet.
Really? That seems fairly bitter to me.
Well, you talk to Liz. She likes bitter. Her family's from Puglia. Mm-hmm. From the heel of the boot of Italy, where bitter is king, where you eat broccoli, rabe, and chicory for breakfast.
You know. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go over to Nancy in Ravenna. Hi, Nancy, you're on.
Hi. I wanted to ask these marvelous chefs if any of them have ever cooked the long, slow turkey method.
How long and how slow?
Well, since 1976, I have been cooking my turkeys. If I have a 24-pound bird, for instance, I cook it about 20 hours. And you cook it on pilot at 165 at the internal temperature of the bird when it's done. And you rub it down with butter and you don't salt it. All you do is pepper it. And you don't touch it for that whole time. You don't have to baste it. And I want to tell you, you have a turkey that is so moist, you can put it on a plate in the refrigerator, and you can still eat it 2 weeks later. It's amazing.
Well, there's certainly something to be said for slow cooking, that's for sure. You want to make sure you get up to 165 with that thing, because sitting at that temperature for a long time, well, apparently you've been doing it so long, no one's died yet, so it's probably cool.
Immunity.
I mean, our recipe is kind of almost in that vein. I mean, not really. We crank the turkey at super high heat for about 45 minutes, then turn the oven down to about 250 and let it finish slowly like that. So basically what you're doing is you're keeping the protein strands from tightening. You're keeping the protein relaxed. It's almost like a sous vide method where you're not getting that protein to get moving fast and creating a lot of friction, which is going to dry it out and toughen it. So the science is good. You got to have a lot of time on your hands, but the science is good.
I forgot to mention that you raise it up out of the pan so that, you know, the air circulates all around it. And you don't cover it either. But it's really amazing.
And how long does it take?
Well, you take so many minutes a pound, however big it is, and you multiply it by 3. So if I have a 24-pound bird, I cook it for maybe 20 hours. Whenever the thermometer says 165 or 185, whatever it is.
Hmm. All right. Well, I will someday when I have a little downtime, we'll give it a shot.
You have 18 hours of downtime.
Extra oven space.
Hey, Nancy, thanks a lot. Happy holidays.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye. 1-800-348-2551. All right, here's one that came in via email. This is, says, I'm a poet based out of Albany who goes by the name City V.S. Woods. It's all one word. I hope I said that right. I'm a big fan of Di Serrano. Anybody? No? Yeah? Di Serrano?
Amaretto Di Serrano?
Well, yeah. Di Serrano is the brand name.
Right. Yeah. And I find it to be perfect for the winter and holidays. However, I'd like to spice it up a bit. Do you know any drink recipes involving Di Serrano, or are there other amarettos you'd recommend?
Luxardo.
Luxardo is one.
Yeah, Luxardo Amaretto, to me, if you're going to drink Amaretto, it tastes most like almonds. Really, really beautiful.
If you, you know, there's a lot of brand names out there, and there's a lot of different products. When you say Amaro, it's a big category. When you say Amaretto, you know, if you drink regionally, especially going through different countries, everyone has their own Amaro or Amaretto. Di Serrano is the most heavily marketed.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times you're paying with these bigger spirit brands. You're paying for the glossy full ad page.
My first publicist, Alfred Cecil, represented Di Serrano in the 70s and hired bakers to develop the Amaretto Love Cake, which actually put them over the top.
Ah.
Funny old story.
Brilliant.
Great old guy. Pants up to here, one eyebrow.
<you know. laughs> Had the unibrow. Well, number to call here is 1-800-348-2551.
But a little Amaretto does, in the right kind of cocktail with bourbons and ryes and stuff, can add a little character and color, a little holiday flair. You don't want to overdo it, but that little bit of nutty flavor can work with those gold liquors, definitely.
All right, let's go to Paul in Turner's Falls. Paul, you're on Vox Pop.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you today?
Good.
Well.
Excellent. I'm calling because I want to know if you have ever heard of a distilled spirit called Palinka.
I've heard of it because somebody mentioned it to me a few years ago, but for the life of me, I can't remember what it is, and they thought it might be something that would be good to bring to the U.S.
My uncle is Hungarian, and every time he'd go back to Hungary, he would bring back bottles of Palinka, and it's basically a full alcohol spirit, but it has the aftertaste of peaches.
Ah, it's a they make a lot of that stuff. There was a place in Queens called the Old Prague, and if you sat at the bar and talked to the bartender, they had unlabeled bottles, and he said, "These are the things that the Saint Bernard has in the barrel."
Uh-huh.
And they had cherry and peach and
so
all
eau de
different
vie.
Eau de vies, very right. Intense high alcohol eau de vies.
Right.
I had a bad experience with them.
There's also all of the stone fruit spirits run the risk of carrying over the still a cyanide derivative. So in this country, we have very strict regulations on how many parts per million you can have of that in the product. So my guess is a lot of this homemade stuff may breach those levels.
Very interesting.
That's why I had a bad experience.
That's right.
Cyanide.
See, now my uncle never mentioned that when he would give shots of it to me when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's okay. It adds character.
Well, you survived,
yeah, absolutely.
Paul. Thanks a lot. Have a great holiday season, huh?
All right. Thank you. Bye now.
It's Vox Pop. It's a Food Friday on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551. So, Chris, I'm interested by the bourbons you have brought from Berkshire Mountain Distillers. You have a Berkshire bourbon whiskey, and you also have a cask finished bourbon, and it says Samuel Adams on it. Explain that.
Okay, we have two different types of bourbons we do. Same formula for both. It's 72% corn. We're buying our corn locally, 18% rye, and 10% barley. Same grain bill, it's called.
Is there a standard that you have to meet to call it bourbon?
At least 51% corn.
Okay.
Lot of leeway in whatever else other grains you want to use. Our regular bourbon is triple distilled, aged in virgin American white oak barrels, which is a requirement to be called a bourbon. Has to be made in the U.S., does not have to be made in Kentucky. And that bourbon's, four-ish plus years now.
It's 2007, I see, yeah.
And then, that's when we started. So.
Oh, I see.
But that bourbon's a little over 4 years now.
Okay.
And then we did a project. It was somewhat like herding cats, but it was a great project. It turned out wonderfully with 10 craft brewers, and barrel aging beer now is all the rage. So all these people will barrel age porters or, Belgian quads or something. And I got 10 brewers involved in this project. And when they would dump the beer out of the barrel to bottle it, they would ship me the barrel right away. We would then take our already finished bourbon, put it in the barrel, and age it for an additional 5 to 9 months it's been, and then release it in the state where the brewery is from. So Sam Adams, obviously, is only being sold in Mass. We did Omegang in New York. It sold out in a couple days.
Yeah.
We did Smutty Nose and Full Sail and Founders. And so we did about 10 of them from around the country, only being sold in the state where the brewery is from, except we now have moved the distillery off the farm. It's in Sheffield. We're open Friday, Saturday, and Sundays, and we are selling a variety of those at the retail shop now.
So can you tell a difference? In other words, blindfolded, would an expert say, oh, well, this is obviously
absolutely
Sam Adams?
What are you picking up? What flavors
so,
are you
well,
up?
The Sam Adams came out of Tawny and Ruby port barrels, and it was their Utopias beer. So it's this crazy, over-the-top, porty, fig, you know, dried cherry beer with this strong maple background because they do a secondary ferment with maple in it. And the Utopias itself is a 30% ABV beer. It's a really big beer.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, you know, we did a one with Terrapin that was a total hop bomb and very floral and bitter and really stands out. And that was the whole point of the project. It was sort of to, you know, appeal to the bourbon drinker and the beer geek together. And it's been great. It's been
fun. To be clear, in order for you to call it bourbon, you have to start with virgin barrels.
Correct.
And then after that aging is done, you can do whatever you want?
Pretty much. So I think the most common one that people would know would be Angel's Envy that is now being finished in port barrels.
All right, let's take a break here. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be back with more of your calls with Rick Orlando, Dan Thomas, Chris Weld, yours truly, Ray Graff. It's a Food Friday. Stay with us.
Support for WAMC comes from the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974, preservenys.org. Binney Water Ice and Spring Water, Kingston, delivering Binney Water Spring Water and coffee service to homes and offices in Ulster, Dutchess, and beyond. Local and family-owned, binneywater.com. And Berkshire Museum, Pittsfield, Festival of Trees on Safari, with more than 100 decorated holiday trees, on view in conjunction with the wildlife photography exhibition Lions and Tigers and Bears, through the lens with National Geographic, through January 4th, berkshiremuseum.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. It is a Food Friday. We are joined by Dan Thomas of the Red Lion Inn, Chef Rick Orlando, and Chris Weld of the Berkshire Mountain Distillers. And we've had a good time talking about turkey mainly and drinks mainly. And it's been a nice sort of easing into the full-scale holiday season. Let's go back to the phones. Steve in Amherst. Steve, you're on.
Hello,
Steve. I just wanted to give some feedback. I think I probably got the idea from this show a couple years ago. So I wrapped my turkey in bacon this year and didn't baste it, and it just came out terrific.
Really? Did the skin crisp up?
Yeah. I took the cover off towards the end, and the bacon was crispy. The skin was crispy, beautiful brown. It was just terrific.
Was it a smoked bacon or just a cured bacon? I'm curious.
Just a regular cured bacon from the store down the street.
Huh. Well, I'll try it with the chicken first and see how it comes out. Yeah, I would think that if it was going to do that, I would get a smoked bacon too, just to get that extra oomph and maybe lacquer that bacon with some bourbon as it's cooking to get more of that flavor in there. But it sounds good to me. I mean, bacon is hip. It's hip. It's been marketed to be very hip right now.
Can't you cook a shoe with bourbon and bacon and it'll turn out okay?
I guess so, yeah. It depends on the bacon. The reason why I ask, there's a lot of crappy bacon out there.
There is.
A lot of people, bacon this, bacon that, and it's like half the bacon.
Next time, thanks.
Pardon? Yeah, well, we'd never be afraid to put some bourbon on your bacon.
Okay,
brilliant.
Thank you.
Brilliant advice from Chef Rick Orlando at 1-800-348-2551.
One of my favorite recipes I learned years ago from Bob Kincaid was a dish he called skillet scallions, where he would get this Tennessee bacon and render it down and get the fat sizzling and the bacon sizzling, and he'd throw a huge handful of chopped scallions and a couple shots of bourbon in there, swirl it around and just dump it over a steak, and it was like this beautiful flavor of smokiness and the sweetness from the scallions and the fat from the bacon, kind of instead of a butter or a sauce.
Nice. All right, you know, we've been talking about bourbon, but I've been reading about rum, and I've never been a rum drinker. So Chris, you want to make something with rum? You have your mountain rum here. Oh. Ragged Mountain Rum.
I think rum on the rocks. That's what we'll make.
There you go.
It works for me. In the meantime, let's go back to the phones and Lisa in Warwick. Lisa, you're on. Oh, yeah, Lisa, can you turn your radio down just a little bit?
Oh, I my radio's off. I'm actually driving.
Okay, well, go ahead.
Okay. Sorry. I have a question. It might stump you guys, though, because you're northern boys, not southerner. So my husband tried to make mint julep, and he's from Brooklyn, and he failed miserably. They were horrible. They were so bitter.
They were bitter, you say?
Very bitter. Very bitter. And so mint juleps I've had in the past were very sweet, almost minty liqueur type tasting, and it was always made by family members. So, I mean, I'm sure it's probably personal preference, but I kind of wanted to surprise my husband and have some really good mint juleps for Christmas. So I was wondering if you could recommend maybe a sweet mint liqueur that I could kind of cheat and tell him it was mint julep.
Okay, so this is great. So let's come up with a simple and effective and yet classic mint julep for
that
Lisa and Warwick.
Correct.
Okay.
I don't know about sweet mint liqueur. I mean, simple syrup and good fresh mint. I mean, there's not much substitute for really good, pungent, fresh mint. I mean, that's kind of the most important part of the drink. Sounds like not enough simple syrup or just not mixed properly.
What would make it bitter?
Peppermint, possibly, if you use like a peppermint schnapps or something. You
yep.
Know?
Bad bourbon.
not pulling the leaves off of the, you know, picking the leaves of the mint, taking it off the stem, yeah. I think is a good one.
Oh, okay. I think he did put the stem with mint in it and like, you know, pummeled it in the glass.
Yeah,
stems
yeah,
you got to slap it around a little bit.
Yeah, it was bad.
Where are you from? Where are you from, friend?
My mom was an Alabama girl. My dad's from Georgia.
Georgia. I had a friend from Georgia that made mint juleps, and she would just put a pack of sugar in the raw, like turbinado sugar and mint leaves, but she would mull it with a piece of sugar cane and leave the sugar cane in the drink. And she said that was the real way to have a mint julep.
Yeah. I loved dry shaking mint, too.
Yeah.
Bruises it up perfectly. Yeah.
What bourbon did you use, Lisa?
I don't have any clue. My husband was trying to surprise me, and then he definitely surprised me and him because they were, like, really bad.
Well, I hope he's not listening.
In any case, add some lemonade, you'll be fine.
He would agree. He kept telling me, these are horrible. I can't believe you have drank these and said they were good. And I'm like, but they really are good. You know how to make them, but obviously something went wrong here.
Dan, is that a drink that you guys still churn out on a regular basis in the summer?
Mint juleps?
Yeah.
They're Derby Day.
Yeah, that's it?
I mean, that's your big time of year. You know, most people, a mint julep should be strong. You should taste the bourbon.
Plenty of bourbon, yeah.
You should taste the mint. They should commingle and get together, and it should get weaker as you drink it. Crushed ice is important.
Right.
You know,
what brand of bourbon would you recommend?
So you know where we're sitting.
Four
right
Roses.
Yeah. I always used Old Granddad back in the day.
You know, I love Chris's stuff. I use it a lot. I use there's so many great bourbons on the market.
I love Bullet.
Bullet is great.
Buffalo Trace is a great, great bang
Trace
for the buck.
23-year-old,
Pappy Van Winkle.
Pappy Van, which is delicious.
I got a case in the car. If you
do you really? Oh, you're the guy who stole it.
It's gone. It's in my car now.
All right. Well, Lisa, thanks a lot. Good luck.
Okay. Thank you so much. Happy holidays.
Appreciate it. So, what are we making over here, Chris?
It's not. I passed the buck over to or the bottle over to Dan.
All right, Dan. What are we making?
Control. He can't help himself. He's
so we're doing a Manhattan.
Oh, nice.
With
rum.
With Ragged Mountain rum.
This is what I read about, and I poo-pooed the idea not 2 days ago.
So instead
of... So it's not going to taste like a Manhattan, though.
It'll taste a bit. Our rum is not... I mean, bourbon whiskeys in general are a category that you can't adulterate. They pretty much come out of the barrel, and that's what you put in the bottle. Versus a rum, you can put pretty much anything you want in it. So a lot of the commercial rums are very sugared up, or molasses and flavorings and colorants, and ours is treated basically like a whiskey. It's triple distilled. It's fermented like a whiskey. So it drinks a lot more like a whiskey would than maybe a, you know, certainly a spiced rum or some of the island rums you'd think about.
Well, I always made my Manhattans with rye, so I guess there was that variation as well.
Rye is the original, being a Manhattan, and New York being a rye state at the time, anyway.
Well, this
great
is good, though.
Notes in this, huh?
I would not call this the classic Manhattan.
No.
But the rum is has a dry edge to it. It's very nice.
No, it is. It's definitely a dry rum.
You can call it a Northern Manhattan, 125th Street. A lot of rum drunk up there.
Well, there you go.
You know?
All right, let's go over to David in New Paltz. David, you're on.
Yes. I make a turkey by carving the turkey when it's raw. And then I take the white meat, make medallions, and the dark meat I put into strips, and I marinate it overnight with a product called Bragg and a little bit of cider, apple cider. And then I take all the bones and stuff that are left over, and I make a stock out of that. And with the stock, I make a stuffing with... kasha, quinine, and mung beans, and I chop up the giblets and stuff, and mix it with some nuts, and that's my recipe.
Well, you know,
when I cook the turkey the next day, what I do is I fry it quick in a cast iron skillet. And then I throw it in the oven for about 3 minutes, and it's done right away.
Yeah, it sounds like delicious. You can do a lot of things with turkey meat. You can treat turkey meat like veal or pork or chicken. But the one thing you miss is that effluvium, that aroma of a roasting turkey in your house is a magical thing. My wife, every Thanksgiving, like I said, we have 30 people at our house, 400 or 500 at the restaurant. I say, why don't we just bring a cooked turkey from the restaurant? She goes, no, I want the smell in the house. That's part of what the holiday is about, is that
roasting. Well, with that stock
roasting.
Cooking, I'll tell you, when you're cooking down that stock, you know, it fills the house with a lot of aroma.
Do you roast the bones before you make the stock?
No, I don't roast the bones. I just put it right in like a soup, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Then I put it outdoors overnight. When the fat freezes at the top, I just take it off.
Hope it's in a mud room.
No, it's right outside.
Oh, you don't have any bears in your neighborhood, then.
I do, but I put it on top of the garage roof.
Oh, there you go. Smart.
Anyway, and the fat, by the way, I mix with some honey and molasses and a little butter, and I just, that's for the kids. The rest, the older people get the cholesterol-free stock.
Oh.
So, you put that stuff on the vegetables, and the kids will eat it up.
I bet. Well, it sounds delicious. Thanks.
David, thanks a lot for the call, and happy holidays to you. 1-800-348-2551. Well, I got to say, the rum is good.
It's delicious.
It pulls through.
It really is nice, and nice and cold. That's a good drink. Okay, here's one. Here's a tweet we have from the one and only Deanna Fox.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and a classic who will be on this program next week.
Save one of these drinks for her.
Talking about pies. Yeah, I think she's interested in all the alcohol, to be honest with you. All right, here's her question. She says, I love punch. What's a good punch recipe for a holiday party, and what's a quick appetizer to pair with it?
Left hook.
Okay. Right. Oh, is that your punch? I was going to say, there's a wonderful spirits writer by the name of David Wondrich who has a book out called Punch, and the subtitle something like the joys and dangers of the ever-flowing or overflowing bowl. So he has a whole group of punch recipes in that. We have on our website, which is BerkshireMountainDistillers.com, under photos, there's a holiday recipe sheet that has a punch recipe on it with Greylock gin.
Yeah. Well, I remember my father used to make planter's punch back years and decades and decades ago, and I forget what's in it. I was a little kid at the time, but I remember all the grown-ups.
Sweeter Island rum drink.
Yeah, those are, I used to manage a restaurant called Sugar Reef in Manhattan in the 80s, and we specialized in many rums and many fruit juices for many dollars. It was a good formula. A
lot of sugar in those, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You feel it the next day.
Still, none of the grown-ups at the party seemed to be complaining. It was quite something. All right, let's go back to the phones, and thanks, Deanna. We'll see you next week on the show. By the way, next week's show, I believe, is about pies. And she's
we'll come in for that one, too.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Let's
mince pie. We need mince pie.
We got to talk
with
about
venison.
Yes. Yeah. Let's go to Harry in Albany. Harry, you're on. Hello.
Hi. I have a question for you. I have celiac disease, and my research has told me pretty much that distilled spirits are gluten-free by virtue of the fact that they are distilled. So my question is, if you take a bourbon, being a distilled spirit and gluten-free, and put it into a keg that had beer in it, do you think the bourbon would absorb gluten from...
You know, if it was just a gluten sensitivity and it just upset your stomach a little bit, that's one thing. But I think if you have true celiac, yeah, there's going to be some gluten in there, and I wouldn't risk it. And that holds true for, you know, distilling. It does take the gluten out of it. But if you're in a small distillery that does, you know, a bunch of different spirits and there's grain dust floating around and you're a true celiac, you have to be careful with that, too. So, but technically speaking, yeah, distilling something does remove the gluten.
All right. Harry, happy holidays. Thank you for calling. Let's go to Matt in Charlemont. Matt, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering if the guys knew anything about this rum I had. I went to the Dominican Republic a few years back, and they called it the Mama Juana, I guess.
Why are you laughing?
I think Rick knows where that one is.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And, I mean, what was really in it? They said there were spices and roots. I just remember I drank it, and I woke up several hours later in an outdoor hot tub in a thunderstorm.
Now, is that good or is that not good?
Depends who's with you.
Yeah. I have a couple of friends who make Mama Juana, Dominican friends.
All right, what is it?
They take rum
and
wormwood.
Okay.
And they swear turtle's testicles.
All right. Really?
They swear that is the secret ingredient.
That's what gets you in the hot tub.
And they throw some other herbs in it, and they let it go about a year, usually in an old Yukon Jack bottle or something. And, yeah, Mama Juana is one of those kind of, I guess, it's more rumored, but it's supposed to be psychedelic and crazy and makes you lose your mind.
Well,
and,
in theory, wormwood has, I mean, it has thujone in it, which in theory is like an MDMA. In high doses.
But if you can ever encounter anybody who makes Mama Juana, let them drink a lot first and fake it, and just watch them start dancing to, you know, the raindrops.
All right.
Mama Juana, that's a legend. Look it up on the internet. You'll laugh. There's a lot of stories of people encountering Mama Juana in Brazil and in Dominican
DR. All right. Well, that's a great call, and good luck. Well, that's interesting.
We have it at our holiday party every
year. You do?
We don't drink it. We let everyone else drink it.
All right, here's one that comes from Facebook. Does Chris use GMO corn? That's from Janet.
That is a complex question. The answer is we are transitioning. Unfortunately, the local farm that we buy from, which is about 3 miles away, is transitioning to GMO. And so at the moment, we are trying to source non-GMO corn. Ours is a blend at the moment. And trying to also source some other local grains that are not GMO. My initial thing was to try and be local and sustainable. And at first, we're all non-GMO, and that is transitioning a bit towards GMO. I would prefer not to be.
Chris, are you familiar with Don Lewis with Wild Hive down in Clinton Corners?
I am not.
He does all non-GMO grains, and he grows a lot of them. So you may want to reach out to him.
Big
cool
grain,
guy.
Too? Corn?
Yeah.
I use
his polenta as my grits.
Okay. So I just got in touch with somebody who's also growing a rye and transitioning to organic non-GMO that we're going to do some rye with, too.
Wild Hive is awesome.
It's when we started, and we're small, so relatively, we don't have the clout to get people to change their planting practices, and I was really trying to use very local. But now there's all these other people in the last 7 years that are starting to spend more time on non-GMO.
So that's your next project.
That's my next
property.
Project, yeah.
Start growing.
Well, you do great work, and while I have seen the gin on the shelves in my local store, I have not seen many of these products. Very impressive, and thank you so much for being here, Chris Weld, and thanks to Dan Thomas. Good luck. Have a great holiday season Red Lion Inn. Rick Orlando. I know things. How's the catering business going?
Awesome.
Yeah,
we're banging it out, and we're having fun. We got a little test kitchen now, which is fun.
Well, nice to have you here.
Thanks,
nice to have everybody here at home and listening. I hope everybody has a great holiday season. Of course, we will be back with another Food Friday. Deanna will be here. We'll talk holiday pies, and we'll talk bourbon chocolate pecan pie. And we didn't get to that today, but Chris, I know that you have a great recipe for that as well. We'll compare it to Deanna's work. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Thanks to Colleen O'Connell, who took your calls. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Support comes from Different Drummers Kitchen,
The Cook's Resource, family-owned and operated with three locations, Stuyvesant Plaza, Albany, Lenox at Northampton, specializing in cookware and cutlery for holiday shopping. Ackerman's Appliance, Hudson, for 37 years, a locally owned dealer of appliance brands such as Sub-Zero, Wolf, Blue Star, Bosch, and more. Showroom on Warren Street, ackermansappliance.net. And Cafe Capriccio, Chef Jim Rua, working to preserve and maintain the traditions of Italian cuisine and hospitality since 1982 on Grand Street in Albany, New York. CafeCapriccio.com. Thanks again, all. Stay tuned for a news update. We'll also have Medical Monday with Alan on Monday. It's going to be a great week. Hang in there. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.